welcome to Just a Minute. Sue Perkins here, and as the minute waltz fades away, it's a joy to welcome you to Just a Minute. First, let me introduce you to the four wonderful and talented human beings playing Just a Minute this week. They are Julian Clary, Jennifer Saunders, Lucy Porter, and Paul Merton. Please whoop and cheer for all four of them. Well, as my bone surgeon once said to me, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why change the format? So they'll be speaking on a subject that I give them without hesitating, repeating or deviating for 60 seconds. So let's see how that goes. And Julian, we are going to start with you. And the subject is King Kong. This is a cracker to start us off with. Can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or deviating on King Kong? And your time starts now.
Oh, he was huge, wasn't he? But much misunderstood, because beneath that hairy, aggressive, if I may use the word, masculine exterior, was a sensitive soul who was only looking for love. I enjoyed all his appearances in the many films in which he starred, and I think he could have gone down the comedy route had he thought of it. But no, it was adventure, hero, beauty and the beast, which was really the foundation of what he did and what he wanted to do. And I don't care what anyone says. King Kong is an invention, of course, but has become a modern myth in my eyes. King Kong. King Kong. Something for the little ones.
King Kong, King Kong, King Kong. Ooh, it was like a bell ringing convention. Now, Paul, you buzzed.
Well, although King Kong is a subject on the card, I think you can't keep saying King Kong.
It would be a very, you're right, it'd be a very difficult show to listen to. So I'm going to see that as a correct challenge, because since it was a winding down.
Yes.
Although, I don't know, I could have listened to King Kong in various different intonations for a little bit longer. But, correct challenge, Paul. 14 seconds, please, to hear what you have to say on the subject of King Kong, starting now.
The original film was released in 1933 to great acclaim. The model was created by a man called Willis O'Brien, and King Kong was actually about 14 inches high. Max Steiner, the composer, created the first real composition for the movies because they had to...
Fabulously and deftly done.
Can I just share a memory from the 1970s? They were showing King Kong versus Godzilla one night on Saturday Night TV, and then the final shot of the film was King Kong swimming away from the camera. And as this mighty beast swam away across the ocean, the continuity announcer came in and said, "And next week, Nicholas Parsons returns with the Sail of the Century." a joyful memory.
You were speaking as the whistle went, Paul. You get the point. Well done there. And Jennifer, we're actually with you next. And poor phone etiquette. That's your subject. Poor phone etiquette. What can you tell us about poor phone etiquette in 60 seconds, starting now?
Well, I like to think that poor phone etiquette might be something of the past, because when I was growing up, we only had one telephone and it was in the hallway. And at night, when the door was closed and we were watching television, sometimes it would ring and nobody would move because nobody wanted to answer.
Oh, Julian.
Repetition of nobody.
Yes, it was a repetition of nobody, but you'd conjured up a very atmospheric scene there for us. Enjoyed it. So, 39 seconds, Julian, correct challenge, and your time starts now.
I think there's a lot of poor phone etiquette around these days. I loathe it when people say, putting you on hold, or sorry to keep you, and it seems to me that they aren't apologising in any real sincere sense. Poor phone etiquette among the youths is something we want to worry about. Oh, our heads wear out.
Well, there was a show we did several weeks ago, which this audience may have heard as it went out, where Julian gave his impression of the youth of today, or the youth of yesteryear, and I'm pleased to hear that they still talk the same way now as they did in 1763.
Paul, you challenge!
Well, I think it's deviation from how a young person might sound.
Well, I mean, we can't generalise how young people sound.
No.
In many ways, that was a composite of how everybody sounds all at once. So in that regard, it was very, very evocative.
Yes.
I mean, I sense you're on to something. There was definitely something going wrong in the brain at that point.
But whose brain? Whose brain?
I think all of our brains listening. So I'm going to give you a point for a correct challenge, Paul, but I really want to hear a little bit more because out of all of us, Julian is so plugged into the young mindset. Yeah. And his evocation of teenagers is so on the money.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, I think we need more.
Yeah.
So 14 seconds, poor phone etiquette, starting now.
I was simply trying to illustrate poor phone etiquette among the younger generation, and I am channeling these folk when I speak in that extraordinary way. Oh, can't help it! It's what I've overheard.
Oh, dear.
Gosh, it makes me want to be young again. It really does. No, it's a time gone by when we all spoke like that. Delightful. You were speaking as the whistle went.
He was, or somebody else was.
He was channeling, I think, but it was marvellous. He got past the finish line, so he gets the point. And Lucy, you're up next. Let's see what we've got in store for you. Your subject is the last time I won a competition. Ooh, I'm interested in this. I'm going to sit back and listen to this. Right, last time I won a competition. Your time, Lucy, starts now.
The last time I won a competition, the prize was to appear on Just a Minute. All I had to do was cut out some tokens from cereal packets and send a cheque for £50,000 made out to Susan Tiberius Perkins. And then I was whisked to this beautiful studio. In fact, the last time I won a competition, it was the Headstone Manor Village Fair, and I presented my blackberries, which took first place. But what I didn't reveal was that we had only moved into our house 2 weeks previously, so the black... How else could I describe them?
Oh, I don't know, sort of... late summer orbs of deliciousness. 20 seconds remaining. Paul, you challenged.
Yes, it was. It was going to be a repetition of blackberries.
It was.
It was. I mean, we'll never know. To be ruthlessly technical, we'll never know, but I suspect you're right. And it would be a very, very complicated ontological argument I'd be making. We don't have time for. And ultimately, this is supposed to be an entertainment show. Correct challenge. You've got 20 seconds to tell us about the last time I won a competition, starting now.
The last time I won a competition, it was being organised by Hampton and Richmond Football Club, which was the president of that club was... Oh. Oh.
I mean, it was a repetition. It was.
Oh, yes, definitely, yes. Yeah.
Well, you get the point back. And thank you, by the way, for crediting me with my correct middle name. Appreciate it. Very hard to fit on a credit card. 12 seconds remaining on the last time I won a competition, and your time starts now.
The delicious late summer orbs of wonder that I presented.
Paul!
Well, you presented them before.
I did.
Yeah, you're going to have to proffer those late summer orbs. 6 seconds on this extraordinary hesitational ping-pong going on between Paul and Lucy. 6 seconds, Paul. Time starts now.
I won the Turner Prize. I took home this 19th century painter, put him on the wall. He said, oh, my goodness, I know we got...
Julian, you challenged.
Well, in your haste to speak in my manner, you repeated yourself. Repetition.
Are you suggesting there's a repetition of bub, 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 bub?
Yes.
You're not wrong.
No, you're not wrong.
You're not wrong. So.
It wasn't, strictly speaking, it was Turner that repeated himself, but that's what he did. He did repeat himself. So, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And also, I mean, plagiarism of that comedy gold character you've created. Yeah. And so
very
with
confused.
1 second remaining, Julian, it's a correct challenge. You get the subject and your time starts now.
The last time I won a
Paul. Oh, interesting, this one. Harry Houdini. I suspect you know quite a lot about Harry Houdini. Let's find out. 60 seconds to tell us all. Your time starts now.
He was born in Hungary and the family moved to America sometime in the 1880s. And he established himself on the American vaudeville stage. First of all, as a manipulator of cards, doing various tricks. But he realised after a while that his fortune could lie in the direction of escapology. He was famous from escaping from handcuffs, inside locked barrels, all kinds of things where he seemed to push himself to the point of death, only to re-emerge at the end and say, I am safe, I am completely all right. And it seemed...
Julian.
Repetition of I am.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, they were a bit close to each other.
They were.
Yeah, Norman, I'd let it slide if there was a little bit of space, but yes, hard and fast upon one another, so it's a correct challenge. You get the point and the subject.
I bet I know how he spoke.
I think we might be about to find out.
I'll just point out he was Hungarian.
I'd keep your finger on a buzzer, everyone. This might be moment to give a correct challenge for this next one. Harry Houdini, Julian, your time starts now.
Oh, he was a devil, wasn't he? There was no holding him down. Ropes, handcuffs, prison cells even. He was out the door, quick as a flash. Escapologists. You don't see many of them around these days. That particular form of entertainment has faded out of fashion. I blame Radio 4. But back in the day, the vaudeville halls were crowded with people dying to see Harry Houdini and his latest bit of nonsense. It's a lot of...
Well done. Speaking as the whistle went. And that's the end of that round. Scores... We've got Lucy narrowly in fourth place, Jennifer in third, Julian in second, and nudging just one point ahead, we've got Paul Merton. Julian, we're back with you again, actually. And the subject, this is a cracker, snake charming. May I remind you, we're on pre-watershed with snake charming. That's pre-watershed, and your time starts now.
Have you ever found a cobra in your knitting basket? Because I have, and I was very worried. I thought it could go for my throat. So I whipped out my penny whistle and mesmerised that creature, and he was cross-eyed within seconds. I was playing, well, greatest hits from the radiogram, and he seemed to appreciate them. He liked the reggae beat most and tied himself in knots, and his tongue, which was forked, hanging out the side of his gob. So I didn't feel in any danger at all, but I could see those fangs. Snake charming, you see, seems to be one of my many gifts. It comes to me naturally. I've tried it in the Arndale Centre. It works there as well. Of course, there is a shortage of snakes.
I'm going to the Arndale Centre as soon as possible. Paul, you challenged.
Yes, sadly, a hesitation.
There was a little tiny window of hesitation. Sadly, it was a great run and I really enjoyed it. 11 seconds remaining. Paul, correct challenge. You get the subject of snake charming and your time starts now.
When I made a programme in India several years ago now, I came across a snake charmer in the middle of the market square. He looked me squarely in the eye and he said, what I'm going to do now is to show you how you charm.
Paul spoke as the whistle went, means he gets the point, and Jennifer, you get the next subject. Well, I hope you have your ruby slippers on, because it's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh.
This is fabulous. Right, the Wizard of Oz, 60 seconds, please, and your time starts now.
There can hardly be anyone that hasn't heard of The Wizard of Oz. Some people consider it a classic. I don't. It's not one of my favourite films. Originally a book written by someone whose name escapes me, but I don't think he'll mind because he's probably dead. The wonderful Wizard of Oz, about a girl called Dorothy, who was about the age of 10. In the movie, played by Judy Garland, who was probably grazing 40, I imagine, at the time, with long dark hair, in a gingham dress and wearing ruby slippers. She plays a character who travels all the way from Kansas via a tornado in her house whilst clutching her dog called Toto. It lands in a world of psychedelia and LSD fantasy, a place of orange-faced tiny people called munchkins, green-faced witches, horrible...
Oh. Jennifer just got over the line. Oh. So few shows done. Such an early...
I just ran out of spit.
But you got... you got a minute. You got a minute. Yes, the whistle went as the whistle. You got a minute, and glorious it was too. Took us right back there. Wonderful evocation. Right. By the way, you get an extra point, of course, for completing the full 60 seconds. Lucy, four colour ballpoint pens. Are they the clickety clickety clack ones, the alternate clickety clack?
Yes.
Oh, yes, yeah. I've got you. It's a fabulous subject. You've got 60 seconds on four colour ballpoint pens. Every stationer in the land is so aroused and present right now. They've been waiting for this for a very long time. Lucy, your time starts now.
Oh, the excitement of getting a four-colour ballpoint pen. In our school in Croydon, it was currency, like tobacco in prison. We'd all say, oh, I love a four-colour ballpoint pen. And so we would click our way to delights. The black ink was for formal, the blue was more fun, the red was to pretend you were the teacher and had already marked your work and it was all fine, and green was if you were a bit weird, and so I never used that particular hue. The four-colour ballpoint pen sat in my furry pencil case and I would whip it out if I wanted to write something particularly important, for example, a poem to Duran Duran. Oh! If I'd said Spandau Ballet!
Of all the bands!
I don't even care, because I did that for Simon, John, Andy and Roger.
Do you know what? If it hadn't been for your deep fandom of that band, I know you could have gone the full 60. But, Paul, you challenged...
Yes, so sad.
Oh. Yeah, it is.
Round to round.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. 11 seconds remaining, Paul. What can you tell us about four-colour ballpoint pens in that time starting now?
The 1960s, for me, was the first time I saw a four-colour ballpoint pen. And, as Lucy said, blue, red, black and green. But they didn't last very long because of the intense mechanism of trying...
Finally, someone talks about the intense mechanism of
yes.
There's a safe space to discuss it. Right, Paul speaking as the whistle went gets the point. And Paul, we're back with you for the subject here, which is the South Downs Way. Lovely. What can you tell us about that? Tell you what, it's made somebody in the third row absolutely livid. Furious. Furious. Without hesitating, repeating or deviating, what can you tell us about the South Downs Way, starting now?
The South Downs Way is a popular walk that stretches from Winchester in Hampshire to Eastbourne in Sussex, lastly round about 100 miles. People do walk the South...
Jennifer.
Repetition of walk?
Yes, a popular walk, and they walk.
Good.
Yes.
Oh, damn. I don't know anything about the South Downs.
That should never stand in your way in this game. So you've got 48 seconds, Jennifer, to just take us to the South Downs Way in whatever manner you see fit, starting now.
I have walked many miles, but never the South Downs Way, which I imagine goes up Downs and down Downs and goes fairly a long way through Downs as well. Mainly Sussex, I imagine, and the southern counties. I have no idea what other counties it might pass.
Repetition of counties.
Yes. I mean, for somebody who's never walked here, you did very, very well there. 27 seconds remaining. Correct challenge, Paul. Let's hear what you have to say on that subject starting now.
There are many ways of traversing the route. You can go by bike, you can indeed perambulate, or run if you wish. Many people spread the experience over 9 to 10 days, and this is a very sensible way of approaching the actual thing that you see on the map, which is a dotted line. You don't actually observe...
Julian.
What? Repetition Julian. Of actually.
Yes, what? Repetition of
no.
actually. Yeah. Repetition of actually.
Never.
Never, I know. Yeah, 9 seconds, Julian. Take us there, starting now.
My husband asked me if I'd tried the South Downs Way. I said no, but I've tried the Straits of Gibraltar. Who buzzed?
Now, Paul, you buzzed.
Yes, repetition of tried.
Oh, yes.
Have you tried the South End Way? No, I've tried the Straits of Gibraltar. I know, it's very disappointing, isn't it?
Gosh, I enjoyed that. Correct challenge, Paul, by the rules of just a minute. 3 seconds remaining on the South Downs Way, starting now.
I want to conjure up for you the image of looking across to the Isle of...
Right, end of that round. Here are some scores. Lucy in fourth. Then we have Jennifer just ahead in third. And then just ahead of her, we have Julian and Paul just narrowly in the lead. And Jennifer, we are with you next. Mm. Ah, from the sublime to the deeply chilling, The Silence of the Lambs. Do you have much knowledge on this? Can you speak for 60 seconds? I hope so. Mm. The Silence of the Lambs. Your time starts now.
The Silence of the Lambs, that chilling horror film. Originally, again, a book about a mass murderer called Hannibal Lecter. Now, my friend Dawn French, who you might know from The Vicar of Dimbleby, she and I once had a double act in which we would parody various movies, and one of which was Silence of the Lambs. I played Clarice Starling, the young FBI agent, and she was, in fact, the criminal himself. Played in the movie by...
You challenged, Julian.
A hesitation, I'm afraid.
Oh. It was a great run, though. Really, really great. 37 seconds, a smasher. Correct challenge, though, Julian. You
shame no one had heard of Dawn French. That was the only...
embarrassing. No, it didn't register in the room, did it?
No.
23 seconds, Julian, please, on The Silence of the Lambs, starting now.
It's a very exciting film. I was on the edge of my seat. Those scenes in the prison where Clarice is looking through the bars at that evil Hannibal and he's toying with her and quivering. And I think probably they won a number of awards. I can't be sure, but it seems very likely to me that performances of that calibre should be rewarded. The Silence of the Lambs.
Well done. Speaking again as the whistle went, you get the point, Julian. And Lucy, we are with you now. The best coffee in the world. Interesting. Let's see what you've got to say on this. You've got 60 seconds and your time starts now.
The best coffee in the world, I have heard, is a bean which passes through the civet somewhere in South America. This animal eats the particular fruit and then poops it. And apparently that makes it good, which I understand because cats always take your favourite things and ruin them. So it must be a good thing. My favourite cup of coffee is none because I only drink herbal tea like some awful Radio 4...
Paul?
It was hesitation, sadly. Mm.
Yes, I think probably you were trying to find a word that was broadcastable there.
I was trying to not insult the Radio 4 audience and label us all as herbal tea drinkers, but I am.
Yes, civet coffee. Have you tried it?
No, is it nice?
No, it tastes as if it's been pooed out by an animal. It's a real fool to drink it, but when in Rome...
It's difficult to get them to do it into the cup.
Really? Really? I used a tail as a lever. They did not like it. So, yes, a correct challenge, Paul. Well done. You get the subject of the best coffee in the world. Let's see if you're a coffee drinker. 28 seconds, your time starts now.
As I crawled along the South Down Way, 100 miles from Winchester to Eastbourne, I was desperate for a cup of coffee. I looked to the right, my left, up, down. Nowhere could I see somewhere I could get the best coffee in the world. Then, suddenly, in the distance, I saw a man coming towards me, carrying a big urn. I thought to myself, if there is coffee inside that vessel, I am going to suck it out at a spout. And I did. He came towards me and said, would you like to taste the...
Well done, Paul. Speaking as the whistle went, you get the point. And I've just been told that we're moving into the final round. And this one, we're with you, Paul, for this topic, which is the aisle seat. Can you speak on the aisle seat without deviation, repetition or hesitation in 60 seconds, starting now?
I'd be very surprised if I can talk about the aisle seat for 60 seconds, but of course I'll give it a go, and having said that, that's probably 10 already gone by. So the aisle seat is important for me because I am of a certain height, so when I'm in the theatre or the cinema, I like to sit in the aisle seat because at least one leg can dangle out into the corridor and trip...
Julian.
Into the corridor?
Corridor, yes.
Did you mean to say aisle? Are you deviating?
No, I could say aisle because I'm sitting in the aisle seat.
But your leg doesn't go in the corridor.
Well, it's... Somebody's theatres are very small.
I mean, it's an interesting dilemma, really, because I understand you were trying not to say aisle. You were,
but, of course, I could have said aisle because it's on the card.
It's on the card.
I was trying not to say aisle, so...
Yeah. I'll say it was deviation because you could have said aisle. I'm being tough on you, Paul, but it's only funny you can take it. Julian, you get the subject. 41 seconds. Your time starts now.
The aisle seat is important to me in case I have one of my turns and need to make my way to the exit. The aisle seat enables me to do this without interrupting other patrons and saying, oh, terribly sorry, I've got to get out.
That was actually genuinely chilling, that voice. Paul, you interrupted.
Well, it was a repetition. It sounded like he was having an argument with a duck.
I'm terribly sorry, I've got to get out, is what I was saying.
It was like you were talking in tongues, like you were possessed. There was a sight. Yeah, it was extraordinary. It's like Exorcist vibes. I loved it. But actually, no hesitation and no repetition. It was just an accent. By Julian with those before. So you keep the subject. 26 seconds remaining. Julian, your time starts now.
The aisle seat's also very handy if you're watching a show that's no good and you think, well, I'd rather be at home vardering the news. And that means you can do it that way. Of course, I understand there's been a number of interruptions which has upset my flow on this subject and I will try to get back on it.
Paul, don't be put off by the interruptions.
Okay, then I won't.
Just a bit of advice, that's all.
No, it's good, and I'm going to give you a point for that. It was good advice. But it's with you, it's back with you, Julian, for 8 seconds. Bring it home, the aisle seat, starting now.
And I don't know why this should be, but I think the aisle seat is often plumper and less worn than the other velvet-covered things.
So that's, of course, the end of the show. Let's have a look at the scores. Lucy is narrowly in fourth place. Jennifer just marginally ahead. Paul in second place. But today's winner with a magnificent 12 points, Julian Clary. And there, my dear chums, I'm afraid we have to leave you. But before I go, I'm honour-bound to thank our wonderful players of the game tonight. Julian Clary, Jennifer Saunders, Lucy Porter and Paul Merton. We are, of course, indebted to Ian Messiter, who devised this silly show, and to Nicholas Parsons, who chaired Just a Minute for over 50 magnificent years. We also thank Caroline Barlow for blowing her whistle so beautifully in my left ear hole. The producer was Rajiv Karia, and this was a BBC Studios production. And this is me, Sue Perkins, saying thank you ever so for listening. And do join us again when we next play Just a Minute. ¶¶